You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Tuesday, the 19th of August, 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market fell, the S&P ASX 200 off by 0.7%. But CSL really sucked the blood out of the share market. Its shares down 17%. Julia Lee from FTSE Russell will have the details later in the podcast. But first to two special interviews. Later, BHP CFO Vandita Pant. But first, Meg O'Neill, the CEO of Woodside Energy. Shares in the company down 2.8% today as it posted a half-year underlying profit of $1.25 billion, which is down 24%. But to find out more, including her take on the global economy, AI, and the government Economic Roundtable, here is my interview with Woodside CEO Meg O'Neill. Meg, first of all, I'd love to get your take on the external environment before we talk about results, how you're seeing the global economy navigating this tariff uncertainty, first of all, and what it means for the commodities that you produce.
Look, it's been really fascinating to watch. I think back in April when the tariffs were first announced, there was a huge market shock. That said, there's been a pretty muted response since then. When we look at our key products, so oil and natural gas, probably the bigger impact for oil has been OPEC Plus unwinding some of the production cuts that they've imposed. So more oil coming into the marketplace, that's put a bit of downward pressure on prices. But there's a geopolitical overlay to all of that. You know, what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening in Russia, what's happening with sanctions. So we always watch a lot of those factors when we think about the oil markets. Natural gas has been strong throughout, and that's been really fascinating to watch. So when you look at our results, we always try to save a certain amount of our LNG to sell on the gas spot market. And the prices that we've got for that product is much better than the LNG that we sell when it's oil indexed. So much of the LNG market is tied to oil pricing, but the call it 25% that we sold on gas pricing, got a $3 better price. So, you know, really strong results from the gas market. And as we head towards the fourth quarter, which is winter in the Northern Hemisphere, that's when gas demand typically grows. So, you know, we do expect to see pricing continue to strengthen, particularly for gas as we head towards the back end of the year.
On the results, you say you've taken a disciplined approach to future growth and reduced spend on new energy and exploration. Can you talk me through that strategy?
Sure. So over the last year, we made a couple of really big acquisitions. So we acquired a company called Tellurian in the US that's a developer of a LNG project. We've renamed it Louisiana LNG. And we took a final investment decision on that in April of this year. We also acquired a low-carbon ammonia plant, which we call Beaumont New Ammonia. So very significant investments in the U.S. These are investments that are going to generate value for our shareholders, you know, through the 2030s. So it's about setting the company up for the future. But with this big capital investment underway, we've realized that, look, we need to tighten our belts in other parts of the business. We need to make sure that we protect the strength of the balance sheet, that we can also return dividends and value to shareholders through the cycle and continue these growth investments. And so that's why we've, you know, ramped back some of the other spending in things like exploration and new energy, recognizing we, you know, need to focus on delivering the projects that we're investing in today. And we'll be able to look at new things, you know, once we get through this big wave of spend.
So does that mean this disciplined approach that rules out another tilt at assets like Santos?
Yeah. Yes. Look, I think we took a look at Santos back in 23, and you know what we found attractive was their LNG business. But we've moved on, and last year with the acquisition of Louisiana LNG, actually that gives us a very material LNG footprint in the Atlantic Basin, which complements our Pacific Basin, and we think there's actually a greater value uplift from being in the two basins instead of being concentrated in the Pacific. So yeah, we're very focused on delivering on that strategy and delivering, you know, that uplift in LNG production for our shareholders.
Are you able to give us an exact update on where you are with that Northwest Gas Shelf expansion?
Sure. So, you know, we were really pleased when Minister Watt was appointed that one of the first decisions he took was to issue a preliminary decision approving the life extension. What is important for us, though, is that we have conditions that are scientifically rigorous and technically implementable. And if you go back, we have a similar approval for exactly the same life extension from the WA state government. That went through a vigorous 6-year assessment process and issued conditions that meets those two criteria. And that's what we want to see mirrored in the federal approval. So, yeah, we're continuing to work with the government and the department to ensure we get a workable approval for all parties concerned.
Two final questions. The Economic Roundtable starts today in Canberra. From my understanding, you've got a representative and board member, Ben Wyatt, there, but I think over the next couple of days. What's your message to government and stakeholders taking part? And how do you make sure this doesn't just turn into a bit of a talk fest on productivity and get something actually done on it?
Yeah, well, I can't answer the second question. You'll probably need to turn that to the treasurer, but we are here, we are ready, we want to be part of the solution. Look, our key message is around the importance of energy. So energy is essential to tackling cost of living today, to ensuring Australia's industry today continues to be prosperous, to underpinning things like a future made in Australia, critical mineral processing, even AI data centers are energy hogs, and we need to continue investing in energy. Yes, we need to be tackling emissions and delivering on our commitments of the Paris Agreement. But the Future Gas Strategy is very clear that renewables need gas to provide the reliable and affordable power that Australians need. That power is essential to economic prosperity. But there's barriers. There's too many barriers, red and green tape, and North West Shelf is a great example. So, state and federal approval for the same thing, 6+ years for the state. We're flirting with 7 years for the federal government. You look at the next big gas field we're trying to develop, the Browse gas resource. The environmental applications have been with those same two bodies since 2018, so approaching 7 years. We've just got to tackle the inefficiency in and bureaucracy that is slowing down investment in energy that would, power Australia's future. So that's our key message.
Final question. When I speak to analysts and I ahead of reporting season, they say find out three things from these CEOs that you speak to. And we spoke about the US economy, the global economy and tariffs. The other thing is about the consumer. But with just a bit of time to round out the interview, I want to talk about AI. They said find out AI. What's Woodside doing in the AI sphere, whether it be to help innovate or to help with productivity?
Yeah, a lot of work actually across the organization. So we've got examples from in the base business using AI to help with diagnosing the root cause for a plant trip. So if a plant goes down, the old way would be the engineers and the operators would pore through a lot of digital logs trying to figure out what exactly happened. AI speeds that up. So improving the operations of our business. Safety, we've got great examples of being able to go back over incidents over years and understand, well, what are the themes that we've picked up and how do we adapt our safety practices going forward? And then in a lot of the administrative space, so, ensuring that routine tasks are done efficiently and trying to automate those routine tasks. So again, we've got AI deployed and AI projects all over the business. And look, I think it's really exciting. It'll help remove dull work from people's table. It'll help improve business outcomes. So, both the top line, the revenue line, as well as the cost line. So super excited about AI.
That's Meg O'Neill there, the CEO of Woodside Energy. From one resource company to another, BHP, Australia's second largest listed company, shares rose 1.6% today. It posted a 26% fall in underlying earnings despite record iron ore and copper production. For more, I spoke with the CFO of BHP, Vandita Pant. Vandita, first of all, record production. How would you describe the last financial year in the context of this uncertain and ever-changing economic environment?
A very strong year, in spite of, as you rightly said, some challenging context out there. We had industry-leading margin, strong cash flow, attributable profit of $10.2 billion, which all enabled us to declare a dividend of $0.60 per share, which is 92 cents in Australian dollars as the final dividend. This dividend was more than our minimum payout ratio of 50%. if I were to take a step back on the operational side, across the across our businesses, we had a very strong operational year as well. Veo Iron Ore had a record shipment and record production and continues to be the lowest cost iron ore business in the world for the sixth year in a row. And across our copper assets, fantastic performance led to 2 million tons for the first time as record volume production out of copper, and which leads to 28% growth in just last 3 years. Very strong results across the business.
In the release, it said BHP says that the global economic outlook is mixed. How so? And what does it mean for Australia, especially in the context for the materials in which you supply? And a bit of a commentary on China?
Yeah, sure. Overall, the economic outlook is mixed because it diverges from region to region. For China, first half was very strong, 5.3% growth rate. And we think across the year, China will end up with around 5% of economic growth, with very strong commodity demand coming out of China, both for copper and iron ore for steel, which has been quite a stable end-use industry in China. If I were to go to India, India continues to be the fastest growing major economy in the world. Very exciting because we see structural demand growth continuing to increase in India for not just metallurgical coal, but also for copper and potash. If I were to go to developed world, over next 12 to 18 months, because of stimulus of fiscal policies and some of the industrial policies coming through, along with the loosening of monetary policy, we think the growth will also come in. So overall, looking at around 3% growth for world economy.
You mentioned potash. When I spoke to my analyst today for the news, I asked her, what's the one question you would ask BHP if you had the chance? This is what she said. She said, ask how important the Jansen potash project is and what its product mix will look like in 5 years' time.
So look, we are very excited being in potash. Potash is a very attractive commodity because it is based on structural mega trends of higher population, better diets, and less arable land, which requires potash. So structurally, very attractive commodity. Jansen, within that, will be a low-cost asset with a life of more than 50 years. So Jansen, as an asset, will be a multi-decade fantastic business for BHP because it will be at the low end of the cost curve. For Jansen, we have announced a revised cost and schedule, and we're looking forward to our first production coming from mid-2027.
So overall, you say there's a significant pipeline of growth. What does that growth look like in the coming year?
Growth CapEx for BHP is stable around $4 billion from here to 2030. And as we go through this growth, most of it, 70% of this, will be in copper. Audience may or may not know, but BHP is the largest copper producer in the world already. And 45% of our EBITDA came from copper in past year. With the kind of growth we have in Chile, in Escondida, which is the world's largest copper mine that we operate, here in South Australia, where we plan to grow from 300 KT to 500 and then to 650, doubling the copper production, and with our project in Vicuña in Argentina and a joint venture in the U.S. Resolution as well. We have a very strong, attractive, high-value growth in copper. We already talked about Jansen, which will bring in huge growth over next early 30s. And here in Australia, in iron ore as well, we had record production last year of 290 million tons out of Pilbara, and we will be looking to increase that to more than 305 million tons, and met coal also increasing from where it is. So huge growth in medium term, but also in long term, to the extent that for next 10 years, BHP growth will be 2.2% every year.
You mentioned copper as a big commodity there. Have you had to change any of your strategies because of US tariffs, though?
So our US tariff exposure, direct exposure, is very low. Only 3-4% of BHP's revenue comes from the US. However, you're right, there was some uncertainty around copper tariffs, which has now been clarified, and that copper tariffs do not apply upstream to the products that we look at, which is concentrate and cathodes. So no material change. First half, copper prices have stayed very robust. In fact, China grew 8% in copper, and overall copper market continues to be in balance, but we are very excited about our growth options because copper remains a very attractive commodity for us.
Two very quick final questions. What about productivity overall in Australia? Of course, the government's holding its economic roundtable right now. What do you see as the most pressing issue to address when it comes to boosting productivity?
The government is focusing on exactly the right things. Productivity and global competitiveness, really critical so that Australia can really leverage all its natural opportunities. From our perspective, the policy priorities remain quite simple, which include affordable, reliable energy while continuing to progress towards net zero. It includes faster turnaround for environmental approvals. It includes, as is already happening, better skills and training, unlocking AI for productivity, which can be a big boost, and of course, fiscal settings for businesses to be able to attract investment into Australia.
Does that mean lower taxes? I noticed that in the release today as well, BHP focused a lot on the economic contribution that it makes. Does that mean Australia needs to get its tax settings right? And what does that look like?
You're right. The economic contribution report that we released this year, again, BHP is one of the largest taxpayers in Australia. And the tax footings are really important because internationally, to be competitive, to attract more investment, that's really needed.
Final question, because we're SBS, we're all about diversity and inclusion. I noticed there was this one line in the release that caught my attention. In April, BHP achieved gender balance within its global employee base. How important is that to an organisation like BHP, which can be sometimes perceived as very male-dominated?
You're right. We achieved gender balance with 41% of our employee workforce now being females. And this is important because it enables the inclusive, high-performing culture where all strands of talent are welcome. Very proud of that.
That's Vandita Pant there, the CFO of BHP. Let's take a close look at the Australian share market now, which fell 0.7%. The S&P ASX 200 off by about 63 points, 8,896. In terms of sectors, 7 of 11 sectors ended higher. Despite the decline on the overall market, healthcare sector down 8.73%. That's because of a 16.88% smashing of CSL shares today. It's followed by Reliance Worldwide, which declined by 6.7%, and PolyNovo down by 6.6%. The best performing stock on the 200, Centura Capital, up by 9.97%, followed by ARB Corporation, 8.5% firmer, and SEEK, which did well, 8% firmer today. With more details on SEEK and the other profit results today, I spoke with Julia Lee from FTSE Russell. Julia, the ASX down today. The big culprit, though, CSL, shares down about 16% as we head into the close. A $3 billion full-year profit, but a massive restructure which will involve a 15% reduction to its workforce and the demerger of its US vaccines business. Why did the market not like the result?
It's a huge tumble today and a pretty bad day for CSL shareholders. But you have to keep in mind that this is still one of Australia's largest success stories. Since the IPO, the shares are up about 10,000%, which means that if you had invested $10,000, the shares would be worth around about $1 million now. But still, a pretty bad day for investors. And really, when we look at earnings results, we look at the results that have happened and what they tell us about the future. So we're also looking for guidance as well. Unfortunately for CSL, what we have seen is vaccine take-up, especially from the US, relatively weak. So as a consequence, we've heard of a demerger of its Aquarius business, as well as the 15% reduction in its workforce. That means its blood products division, which is Behring, will play a much larger part. But unfortunately, in these results today, those results coming from that blood products division disappointed expectations. Not only that, the guidance that we've seen for the current financial year has been weaker than the market expected. So a combination of all of that has seen that tumble in CSL share price today.
The other big profit today is BHP, a 26% slide in full-year underlying earnings, record production, though, of iron ore and copper, but it is seeing lower prices. I just spoke to Vandita Pant, the CFO, but I'm curious to get your analysis of the results.
I mean, this is one of the things that confuses a lot of investors about earnings season. You know, a tumble of 26% in terms of earnings, and yet the share price rises today. And I guess when we look at earnings, it's not just about the earnings that are reported, but what the expectations are in terms of the market. And the market had been expecting to see a weak earnings result coming through. And that's because we know that iron ore prices were down by 19% in the last financial year. So despite that record production that we saw in iron ore as well as in copper, we did see earnings down by 26%. The good news is that looking forward to the current financial year, it does look like things are much better. And that's because we have seen stabilization from its largest client, which is China. Not only that, a lot of investors still think of BHP Billiton as a BHP Group as an iron ore company, but we've seen a massive transformation, and around about 45% of revenue now comes from copper, with huge projects in Chile as well as Argentina. So BHP, despite that tumble that we've seen in terms of iron ore prices and earnings, the shares traded higher today.
Yeah, I'm sometimes guilty of calling it BHP Billiton too sometimes, Julia. The same way people still call me Richard sometimes. any indication of from these two companies about the way US tariffs are impacting the global economy?
BHP did note that the escalation of US tariffs could impact on global trade, especially in terms of commodities, and in particular watching iron ore as well as copper. In terms of CSL, CSL did say that pharmaceuticals aren't yet subject to any US tariffs, but they are monitoring the situation very closely and also in touch with US regulators as well. So it does look like the US tariff situation still a moving feast. So watching those headlines coming through from the US and President Trump.
Very quickly, any other profit numbers you're keeping an eye on today?
Some big moves today, Ricardo. If we have a look at SEEK up by more than 5%, we've seen double-digit growth across Australia, New Zealand, as well as Asia, and the dividend, a big jump as well. We've also seen a good result coming through from ARB, which looks at our car products. Shares up by more than 5% on the back of a bigger-than-expected dividend payout. But on the flip side, we have seen HMC Capital disappointing in terms of operating earnings as well as the outlook. The shares tumbling by about 10% today.
What's profit reporting season telling you at the moment about the investment environment?
I think, first of all, going into reporting season, it was always going to be quite a hard one for the Australian market. And that's because valuations are relatively stretched with the PE ratio at 19 times. That means we need to see earnings growth coming through to help support these levels. In terms of the last financial year, we've seen a bit of weakness creeping through. However, in this financial year, the market is expecting earnings to grow by 5.3%. So that's a positive sign. We have a look across sectors. We know that the tech sector is still looking relatively strong with double-digit growth coming through. But in the consumer space, we have seen margins being squeezed. So just watching that very carefully.
Final question. You know, the market's been hitting record highs lately, even though it's down today. In that kind of an environment where we're also seeing lower interest rates, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
I guess when you see stretched valuations like this, it is more about managing the risk rather than chasing those returns very aggressively. So having a look at a diversified portfolio to manage that risk, and also just having a look at the underlying earnings environment, because the market does move in cycles, but not all sectors move in the same cycle. So we have a look at the banking space. We're probably seeing a peak in terms of earnings growth, with interest rates now starting to fall and unemployment most likely to move up. But in the mining space, we're coming off a very low base where China's starting to stabilize. So just having a look at where those companies are in terms of their own cycle.
That's Julia Lee there, Head of Pacific Client Coverage at FTSE Russell. And that wraps up this podcast for this Tuesday. Don't forget to give it a like and a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you enjoy it, click subscribe. See you tomorrow.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.